again tonight. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live again tonight, and we have a very special guest. But before we go on, I want to give out our toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in and ask questions tonight. And there might be people who want to call in, because this is going to be rather of a controversial subject tonight. But the toll-free number is 1-888-815-9756. 1-888-815-9756 if you want to call in. Okay. Everyone always loves a good mystery, especially one that has never really been solved. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. And one of the greatest mysteries that's still around is the Philadelphia Experiment. And, of course, we're going to let our guests explain what that is to the people who really don't know. But, you know, it's been in the metaphysical circles for so long, I don't see how anybody could not really know what the Philadelphia Experiment is and what it refers to. But the amazing thing is, my guest said, tomorrow is the 66th anniversary of when all of this happened. So he said tonight would be a perfect time to do the show because it's almost on the 66th anniversary. It's hard to believe it's been that long. Okay, my guest is, he goes by the name of Drew, and I've known him for many years because he was on the lecture circuit when I was just starting out and we were all doing this together. And he's been exploring this subject for many years. And now he says he's come up with some new information that may help solve the mystery. All right, so we're going with Drew. Drew and Deborah, you work together, don't you?
Yes, Deborah and I have been together ever since I retired from the Marine Corps, Dolores.
Uh-huh. So you've been working on this how many years now?
15, going on 16 years.
It must be a passion if you've been involved in that long of time.
Well, it had been, only because prior to my retirement from the Marine Corps, I had a number of different experiences that kind of baffled me, and based upon those experiences, I didn't deny them and just followed through to see where it all led to, and it led me to the Philadelphia Experiment.
Do you want to tell anybody about these experiences?
Well, they were time-related experiments that I was involved in while in the Marine Corps, and they kept track of me for a number of years, and I didn't really become aware of any of this until probably about 2 years prior to retirement, and I kept it to myself. I didn't discuss it with anybody, and it even took a number of years after I had retired before I finally realized that I needed to figure out what was going on with this story, the Philadelphia Experiment.
You said you didn't realize for several years that
yes.
Something was going on?
Yeah, it's, so after about 5 or 6 years after I retired, I kind of figured it out what it was all about.
You think you were being monitored during that time, or what?
Oh, sure. Even during my time in the Marine Corps, I was being monitored, closely monitored.
Uh-huh.
And
so there were a lot of, at the time, you didn't know anything was going on, though.
In the last couple of years, I did recognize there were things going on because I had a lot to do with our intelligence agencies that really I shouldn't have had anything to do with them at all.
Yeah.
I got involved with them. They didn't know I knew, but I kept it to myself, and I just tried to maintain a stable balance as far as what it was all about, and just followed through after I retired. Now, after I retired, they didn't have the ability to keep track of me like they did while I was in the Marine Corps.
They couldn't monitor what you were doing as easy. Is that what you mean?
Right. They didn't know my schedule, and I kept my schedule pretty much to myself. So
when you began being interested in the Philadelphia Experiment mystery at that time, or what?
Yeah, I I'd actually gotten involved in the UFO community initially through some associations that I had with a couple of people, and this one lady, she was one of the group head of these abduction groups.
BBS Radio.com.
Okay, everybody, I'm sorry that we had that break there. Sometimes the little gremlins play tricks on the lines, and I was having a hard time hearing him because it was breaking up very badly, so they reconnected us with a better line. The station says they have so many ways to connect that there's no way anybody can throw us off the air altogether. And you know, I'm always talking about some controversial stuff, so that part doesn't bother them. Okay, let's see if we can, with a good connection now. Okay, Drew, are you there now?
Both Deborah and I are here.
Now, that's a lot better. It's louder, and maybe it's not breaking up so bad.
Great.
Okay. All right, but you were saying that after you got out of the service, they couldn't monitor you as much, and you got involved in UFO agencies and organizations.
Right, and what happened was I met this wonderful lady who was the head of this abduction group, and I just went there for one evening, not knowing what I was getting into, and we sat around the kitchen table that evening after the group broke up, and we started talking about some of the things I was dealing with, and she walked away and went to her bookshelf and pulled this book off the shelf and brought it over and said, you know, this has got to belong to you because I don't know why I bought it. I've never read it, and I have had no need for it. And she had it for about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And the book was The Philadelphia Experiment. So it was one of those. It was just one of those things that was written by Charles Berlitz and William Moore. And it was just one of those markers in my life that kind of led me down this path.
Uh-huh.
So I got a little bit interested into it, and I rented the movie, and while I was watching the movie, of course, my VCR and television erupted on fire, and every computer system I had back then, anything I was touching electronically was just crashing. So there was a lot of emotions and a lot of energy and a lot of recall of memory that I was involved in as far as dealing with this particular experiment. But this was all dealing with while I was in the Marine Corps.
Uh-huh. You know, they always say, you know, my work with hypnosis, a lot of things can be buried but in your mind, but eventually things will come out if they're supposed to.
Yeah, we have five different physical senses, and they all have different triggers, you know.
Yeah. So this is what I work with in my work all the time, uncovering hidden memories. But I know about Carlos Alente's work and, you know, Berlitz, I know all those people. You know, they said that Carlos Alente's, most of those, his books disappeared. The ones where he had made the notes in the margins, I believe it was, wasn't it, with the Berlitz book? Have I got that correct?
I don't believe so, but...
I have it wrong.
Yeah, Carlos Miguel Allende was the individual back in the mid-50s that first raised the allegations of what we now know today as the Philadelphia Experiment.
Yeah.
He was a merchant marine sailor on board a Liberty ship commissioned and christened with the name of the SS Andrew Furseth. And he had indicated that while he was on board and out at sea, that he had seen this destroyer escort, the USS Eldridge, had disappeared right in front of him. So
yeah,
that's how it all got started, and it's a long story. We've delved into that particular story, but we've taken off onto a different path as far as trying to verify Allende's witnessing comments. And surprisingly, as we got into the National Archives, Dolores, and the Navy's archives, the documentation that we began pulling is basically leading us down the path that something did happen.
I saw on your website, you know, I downloaded the literature now that you're writing about all of this, and you are coming up with some conclusions I don't think anyone else has found.
No.
Let's tell the audience first what the Philadelphia Experiment was. There may be some out there who don't even know what we're talking about.
Good. That's a good place to start. What the Philadelphia Experiment was alleged back, like I said, by Carlos Miguel Allende back in the 50s, but it actually took place in 1943, and the experiment was conducted by the United States Navy during the Second World War. The Navy was actually using or testing a configuration of technology that permitted the ship to disappear and teleport itself from point A to point B. Now, point A to point B could be 100 miles, but it would do it within minutes and versus the hours and the days that it may take to travel that distance. So the whole experiment dealt with teleportation of a Navy ship.
But there were things that went wrong with the experiment, weren't there?
Well, you got to understand that this was just the beginning. This was the actual beginning stages of experimentation. There were dry runs. There were smaller experiments, but they didn't include the human factor, Dolores.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what took place on the 15th of August, 1943. The human factor was included, and they were no longer tethered to the shoreline as far as the movement of the ship. The humans that were involved, the sailors and the scientists that were on board, were to control the movement of the ship.
Yeah, that was what they said before. They'd just been experimenting with objects. But when you combine the humans with the objects, that's where they ran into problems.
Yeah, and when you develop a magnetic field as intense and strong as the one that would encompass a ship that's literally the length of an American football field, that's a pretty big magnetic field. And any human within that particular field is going to be affected detrimentally. So we believe that it was obvious that those that were controlling the movement of the ship while on board the ship were hindered by the field and no longer could do their job. And that's where things went wrong. So,
you want to tell people what they said, the observers said happened whenever the ship rematerialized.
Well, right. Well, there's rumors to the fact. Now, we have not got any definite evidence as of yet, but we're getting very close to it. There's rumors to the fact that the human factor, most of them were embedded within the hull of the ship. There were electrocutions. Many of them went crazy simply because the magnetic field affects the brain in detrimental ways. So there's indications at least half the crew didn't survive the movement of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And in our report that we've got out published on the internet right now, we are seeing indications that over half of the crew members are kind of not around when they should be.
Yeah.
So we've uncovered a lot of evidence that actually shows that the USS Eldridge was involved in an experiment where the Navy has denied any involvement in any type of experimentation. They have denied anything unusual as far as activities pertaining to the ship. But our evidence is now showing us that this is quite the contrary. They did have some form of experimentation, and we believe, and we are actually seeing casualties.
Okay, because I wanted to fill the audience in on the story, and it is a fascinating story. It's been around for a long time. But now, even though the Navy has denied it, the government has denied it, you are definitely finding clues that will lead, to the solution. Do you want to go in what you've uncovered?
Well, yes, we can. We've got currently right.
Is there? She wants to jump in.
Oh, okay. Well, Drew loves to talk, Dolores. So I don't know how much I'm going to be able to jump.
I don't want you to feel ignored. All right, because when I was reading the literature you sent me, I think these are things I've never heard of, but you're uncovering. So let's go ahead and tell everybody what's happening now.
Well, we've got what we're doing, Dolores, is we're not publishing a book. We're publishing investigative reports on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Now we've already published two reports. The first one is free to the download. If anybody wants a free download, they've got it. You know, all they have to do is click on the button, and they can download the first report. So the first report is titled "A Window Back in Time." And the criticality of that particular report is to show people that there's been evidence that's been sitting in front of us for decades, but no expert or even including historians, Navy historians, and experts in the field of maritime, the maritime field, have all ignored two photographs that have been out there since 1957. And our first report, we asked the individual reader to change their perception of, instead of looking back in time, we want them to change their perception to looking at events, look down on events. And we take the individual reader on board the ship. And when you go on board this ship, you have to have a keen eye for Navy protocol. And this is where I come in as a retired Marine, who with the Marine Corps a sister service and part of the Department of the Navy, and have had numerous tours on board Navy ships as a Marine. I'm very familiar with the ship protocol. So it was very surprising, even to myself, when we started to look at the details within the photographs of the ship, and we're looking, what those photographs show is we're looking at the ship after it had rematerialized. They did conduct an experiment. And, you know, we're slowly, methodically more so than slowly, but methodically releasing our evidence and taking people by the hand to show them how to interpret this evidence. And we've got all kinds of classified documents, declassified documents, that have been released by the Navy to the National Archives. And what we're doing is we're developing a better picture of that time and what type of activities the USS Eldridge was involved in.
If I may add, there's a great deal of information that we have compiled on this, and it is a lot easier to take folks through a report process, as Drew said, versus a book, because a book can be very overwhelming. And with the kind of information we have, and as detailed as it is, and as detailed as Drew is with his analysis, it can, as I said, be overwhelming. So with the report process, we can take you through each step. We can put you in the driver's seat, feeling that you are a part of the experiment, and getting a visual on it and approach it in many different directions for those that are more on the visual aspect or those who are analytical. It's a beautiful blend of combining all of that into one, so it'll reach out to all those folks to make it easier to understand. So it doesn't sit on a shelf like some books can due to its volume of information that we have to provide. Go ahead, Drew.
But we literally have hundreds and hundreds of declassified documentations as evidence, and we don't want to overwhelm the people like Deborah was saying. So we're putting it out in investigative reports.
Well, I know you said those pictures have been around for a long time, but the majority of the investigators didn't really know what they were looking at, and they didn't know what they were looking for, I suppose.
Well, you know, the beauty on that, too, is that those investigators before at least put us on the path to know, even with the information that they do have that we have been able to show is incorrect or incomplete, even with Berlitz and Moore's work, we're able to show that it's given us a running start. So we know other areas and other ways to pull this information out. So that even though the information was incomplete before, they have been given us the gift of a path to go to be able to pull this information out that they have not been able to obtain.
Well, they were pioneers, Dolores.
Yes, they were, but most of them didn't even realize what they were looking at. So
Now
you really are pioneers because you're carrying it on.
Well, I will go on the record right now, Dolores. Even though we've only published two reports, and our third one will be published in the next day or so, I will go on the line that between Deborah and I, we have already resolved the mystery surrounding this particular experiment. And I will simply tell your loyal listeners that we have resolved and have proven to ourselves, which we will eventually get around to in our investigative reports, that we have proven that this experiment does exist. We have.
Do you want to reveal any of those findings right now?
Well, we can. We can. We can. You know, in the second report, for example, we begin to see the initial phases of a cover-up. Now, we've got photographs that show that there was a fire on board, a very intense fire, a very deadly fire. And when we go to take a look at the USS Eldridge's deck logs, for that same particular day, the photographs are said to have been taken. There's no record or no written record in the deck logs. So this is the beginning.
The deck logs had disappeared for a while, hadn't they?
Pardon? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
But the logs had disappeared for a while, hadn't they?
Yes, absolutely, you're correct. Just to give a little bit of insight in the past history, Berlitz and Moore, back in 1978, when they were conducting their investigation, it was William Moore who actually did it, and Berlitz came in and supported Moore as a collaborator. When they went to the National Archives to extract the USS Eldridge's deck logs to review them for this period of time, the National Archives could not find the first 3 months of the deck logs. So that was probably the biggest piece of evidence that Berlitz and Moore relied upon as evidence that something was going on. They never proved the experiment took place. But, you know, it was no coincidence that the logs were missing.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 1995, the Navy decided to release, or they found the 3 months that were missing, and they released them to the public.
Uh-huh.
So when we're conducting our investigation, and we got photographs that show something very unusual that we actually show in our second report, which is titled Ghost Ship in Distress, when we take a look at the evidence and the details in the photograph, and we make a comparison to the decalogues on the same day, it's like they're, you know,
they don't match.
They don't match.
Mm-hmm.
Something's definitely wrong here. And we're going to get into how all of that will unfold as we start presenting our evidence in future reports. So we have a very methodical thought processing as far as leading our readers down this path, because previously anybody, I don't care who it was, who has gone down this path of trying to resolve this experiment, they've run into stone walls. They've come up against nothing but blocks and have never been able to resolve it. Deborah and I have resolved this whole mystery surrounding the experiment.
Well, because you are so methodical, you found a little crack that most people overlooked.
Yes.
That's what I feel.
But you got to also appreciate, Dolores, that, you know, the folks that have gone before Deborah and I appreciate the fact that they were not knowledgeable, and this is not to take anything away from them or their work, okay? I'm trying to be as professional as possible here and
yeah.
as respectful and courteous. They just didn't have the expertise that I have. I'm a retired Marine. I have the military expertise, and that's what it takes. So with my background as a systems analyst in the Marine Corps, we are more capable of going behind the veil as far as how the military operates internally. Berlitz and Moore did not know how to do this.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's no fault of them.
Okay, because you said there's no way of really proving that, you know, the ship did become invisible and all of that, but there's definitely, you're proving a cover-up did occur.
Right now we have definitely a cover-up, yes. But eventually, we will have the evidence that will prove that the experiment did, in fact, take place.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've always wondered about those all those men on the ship. They all had families. How could they hide that over 100 people disappeared?
Well, that's a very good question, Dolores. And I will simply put it this way to you. You know that at the time in 1943 we were at war.
Yes.
They can simply come out and say missing in action, and that's what they did.
Uh-huh.
Okay. They didn't have to come up with any scenario of what happened to them. They just report to the families that their loved one was missing in action.
And in those days, the families didn't really ask too many questions.
Right. You know, what questions could you ask other than, you know, grieve over your loss?
Yeah, because nowadays, you know, we'd want to know more about what happened. But in those days, most of the time, they'd just get a telegram. That would be how they would be informed.
That's right. That's right. It's simple. It was as simple as that. So there is an advantage during time of war. And it actually gives the military an opportunity to set other things in place if they need to cover it up. And you're dealing with something that was very secret, highly secretive, probably more secret, if not equally as secret as the development and the research surrounding the atomic bomb.
Yeah, and I've done a lot of research on that, so I've come up with a lot of things that were covered up with that.
Sure.
But, you know, we have the access now. In those days, you know, well, we had newsreels in the movie. That was our only access to the news. We had newspapers that came out weeks after the events. And it's not like nowadays when we have instant communication.
Right. No, today's a different world. I agree.
Oh, yeah. So that would explain how they could get away with something like that. Go ahead.
What we plan on doing, Dolores, is that eventually we will actually be identifying who those men were.
Mm.
So, you know, our research, we have spent 15 years doing a lot of research. We've been under the radar. We've kept ourselves off the high, the skyline with all of this, and we've been diligently doing our work here. And we're going to take this into areas that will just surprise everybody. We're going to show how during World War II, the entire federal government, the entire war was rewritten before it was written.
Yes, I believe that because, like I said, I did research the atomic bomb when I wrote my book on Hiroshima. And I found a lot of things that I didn't know. It was very hard to believe how, you know, that was all, the atomic bomb was an experiment.
Sure.
And they had to drop it somewhere because they had to see if it was going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it was intended for Germany, but the war ended too quickly. So they had to drop it somewhere to find out. And you can only do these things in time of war.
Right.
So when I was doing my research, it was like, this is what happened, and we've never been told these things.
Well,
but
we're going to actually, we will actually.
I believe what you're coming up with, because I found a lot of things that the government hid in during the war.
Right. We will actually identify the actual program that was intended to rewrite World War II history.
Oh.
We've got the documentation. And this is one of the steps that we anticipate reporting on in a future report. And this was a method and means in which the Navy was capable of hiding all the evidence surrounding the activities of the USS Eldridge and the experiment itself. So we've got a lot of evidence to present. And for us to do it in one published formed book, it's just too overwhelming. You need time to consume the information per report, and then you could move on and clearly see how these other things unfold and play as, you know, their role in unraveling this experiment, the mystery surrounding it.
So that's why you want to do it in installments then?
Yes, it's kind of like, yeah, basically it's that. It would actually take 3 to 4 days for me to present everything, and that's a good 8 hours per day.
Okay. But you said you think eventually then you're going to be naming names and the ones who were really involved in all of this?
Right. We're going to actually show you who conceived the idea, how the idea was initially financed, how the government, the Navy, got involved in this technology, how they had actually covered up all the activities surrounding the experimentation. We will show how the government rewrote history. I mean, we've got an abundance of information here. This is truly one of the greatest means in which we can show, as a contemporary example, that time travel is, in fact, not a possibility, but a reality.
Because I think after that experiment went bad, they continued, is what I've been told in my work, that it continued in another way, so they were trying to perfect it as they went along.
The experiment is ongoing right now.
Yeah, that's what I've been told. I've also
yes.
been told things are dangerous to know about, too.
It is actually ongoing, and it will go on for the next couple thousand years.
But they did it, after that, they tried to do it more in secret so no one would know, and they had to perfect and, you know, correct their mistakes that they had made.
Well, it took them a while to figure out what went wrong.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It probably took them about 40 years to actually figure out what it took to dampen the energy surrounding the ship. The ship right now is in the time continuum, the fourth dimension, and it is out of control. And it will actually pop in and pop out and pop in and pop out in a number of different locations and time frames. You know, this is difficult for people to get their minds wrapped around right now. But as time goes by, one of our goals is to show people the proper understanding of time. There is a difference.
Because, within my work, I work with all these strange concepts. But then you mean that they did materialize again when they took the pictures right after that.
Yes.
But then, according to what you found, it dematerialized again many, many times, or what?
Yeah, this was an ongoing experiment. This ship popped in and popped out and popped in and popped out a number of different times. We've got evidence that Lande had witnessed it while out at sea. In his written testimony, he talks about that there was an experiment that took place in Philadelphia, where they had moved the ship from Philadelphia to North Fork, Virginia, and then returned within a matter of a few minutes. Well, this is additional experimentation, see. So we've got a number of things. We believe, as of our second report, we believe, according to our evidence that we've got presented as of right now, that the Navy started conducting experimentation on the 12th of September, 1943, in the Long Island Sound.
Okay.
That's what our evidence is proving right now. And as time goes by, we've got a lot of twists and turns. Dolores, there are so many snares and traps that the government has put in place that if you're not careful, you're going to go down one of these paths that will end in a dead end. And that's where most experts have gone, is they've gone down these dead end paths. There, you will be surprised as to how they were capable of manipulating things. They were very keen on what they were doing, and we are actually going to show that this is in fact a conspiracy to cover up this experimentation.
Mm-hmm. And I believe it still is going on too, because that was one thing they want to perfect is time travel.
Yes.
It's just like Star Trek, you know, eventually like Star Trek was, you want to be dematerialized here and rematerialized somewhere else. The scientists are not going to let that go. It's too intriguing.
Well, it changes the whole world in which you live in.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's been conditioned to believe that the world that they live within, time travel is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds to many as a crazy idea that we could do it. You get into the scientific community, they'll say, well, we don't have the capability of doing it today. Maybe people in the future, they are capable of doing it. But let's stop right there. If our generations in the future are quite capable of time travel, maybe those are visiting us today.
Yes, they are, because in my work, I come across a lot of these strange things also.
That's right.
And, you know, we have time travelers from the future who are coming back and working with people. But in my work with UFOs, and I've been doing that for over 20 years, they travel back and forth through dimensions.
Sure.
But it has to do with changing the vibrations and frequencies of their craft so
right.
they can appear and disappear.
Right.
So it could be something along that line, couldn't it?
As far as time travelers coming from the future?
Well, either way, because...
Are you talking
well,
about...
Well, actually, it could be either way, because the other UFOs and things that I've worked with, they say this is how they travel back and forth to their own planets, even. They don't go by, motors that we have, you know, and that's what other investigators said. What kind of fuel do they use? They don't do it that way. They're able to change the frequency and vibration of the actual craft. And when they do that, they can disappear and reappear anywhere they want.
Well, sure.
And I was thinking it may be something along that line. vibration.
Well, it has everything to do with frequency. It has, you know, just use the radio as an example. You use the tuning knob to adjust the frequency. That's the same thing that it's the same concept for traveling through time. And I want people to recognize the fact that the Philadelphia experiment was just the beginning phases of understanding what happened. I believe that the movement through time was a surprise. The movement through space at ultra speeds was not a surprise. They knew they were going to accomplish that, but it was the movement through time that was the big surprise.
Okay, so you think the original intention was to become invisible, wasn't it, as a weapon in war, wasn't it?
Well, no. No. The original experimentation was to move the ship from point A to point B within a matter of a blinking of one's eye.
Okay.
The invisibility, Dolores, was just a byproduct.
Okay.
You see? When you transport something that huge using technology that is not known at the time at ultra fast speeds, the ship just disappears. So yes, it's a form of camouflage. It's a form of it's probably one of the best weapons. I mean, warriors throughout the eons have looked at invisibility as a means, the ultimate means of fighting one's enemy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
But it was originally being done as an experiment to be used in war, wasn't it? The entire experiment to move ships.
Right.
Or was it? Okay, that's what I was wondering what the original purpose was.
The original purpose solely was to move the ship from point A to point B.
Okay.
That's what they intended to do. But like I said, a lot of people believe that it was radar invisibility. They were conducting experimentation for radar invisibility. Malarkey. That's not true. A lot of people believe that that it was. You know, invisibility, the process of the invisibility was magnetic mines made the ship, invisible to magnetic mines. That's a bunch of malarkey, okay?
Uh-huh.
This is not what it was about. And we've got the evidence to prove it. I'm not pulling nobody's strings here. We've got it. And we're going to present our reports.
You've been around for a long time, and nobody keeps that something like this unless they're really devoted to it. So
well,
I believe that.
Right. We've devoted 15 years, 24 hours a day, every year. And we've got an abundance of information that needs to be presented methodically because it is a very complex issue. And we are trying to make it as simple as possible for everybody to understand. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand the path we're going to take you down.
You know, I've heard, too, that Einstein was involved in some of these things. Do you think so?
No. No. No, Einstein was not involved. Now, Allende will say that Einstein was involved, but I believe that Einstein, if he was involved at all, it was after the fact.
Okay.
He was not involved in the R&D, he was not involved in directing the experimentation. No, Einstein was controlled. They would not let him be part of many secret projects, okay? He was kind of like somebody they would go to, pull information, but whatever information they would be looking for, he would have no idea what they were actually doing. He would just give them the information.
Okay, because when I was researching the atomic bomb, they were using a lot of his information and theories But they said he became quite upset and how they developed it into a weapon. So I don't think he was involved in that. It's just using his research and his information.
Yeah, he was just kind of like a consultant.
You know? Uh-huh.
But involved in, deeply involved in any R&D or experimentation, no, Einstein was not.
Okay. Let me ask you, you probably know Al Bielek, don't you?
Yes. Both Deborah and I have connected with Al Bielek many years ago.
Yes, I knew him back when he was on the lecture circuit, and I haven't seen him in many years. But he started out, too, talking about the Philadelphia experiment.
Mm-hmm.
So you were the only two that I knew at that time who were even bringing this subject up.
Well, yeah, I don't believe there's too many others out there. I mean, there are a lot of websites out there. But as far as if you're looking for information and you're looking for information that you can chew on, and validate. I will tell you right now, the only place you can go is to our website, because one of my goals and objectives from the very beginning was to provide our information and having it backed up by legitimate sources of documents. And that's what we've got. So we're not going to tell you what we think happened. We're going to show you what did happen and prove it to you by showing you the actual documentation. You know, so our approach has got something for everybody.
See, that's a big difference.
Yes,
between a lot of the speculation that goes on in this, in the metaphysical field and actually showing what happened. That's a big difference.
Yeah, we're not going to just tell you something and let you fend for yourself from there. We're gonna actually give you documentation that you can set your eyes on, and the documentation we have sourced out and made sure that it wasn't manipulated. There's we can trust it and go with it. So
your website hasn't been up very long, has it?
No, we have been only. We've just beginning our project. We began, we launched our website in April. So, the search engine spiders, I don't believe, have really found us yet. So if your listeners would just type in http://www.thephiladelphiaexperiment.com, you'll pull up the page.
Okay, you really don't need that other part in the beginning.
Yes, you do. Right now you do, Dolores, because if you just put in the Philadelphia experiment or www,
will usually take you there, won't it?
No, you will not find it, because the search engine spiders have not yet found us.
Oh, okay, because I just thought maybe you wouldn't need all that. So you have to put the HTTP then.
Yes,
and
If you put that up front, you will get our website.
And then you put www.thephiladelphiaexperiment, all in one word.
Yes.
.com.
Now, another way, Dolores, just for those that may be interested, if you type in phase transition, the Philadelphia experiment, you'll pull our page up.
Phase transition. Phase. T-H-A-S-E?
Yes.
Phase transition?
Right.
Okay.
Is that the way you want
to have communication with people is through your website then?
Right. If you go on Google and just Google phase transition, the Philadelphia experiment, you'll go right straight to our, they'll pull up the page for us.
Okay, and do you want to have communication with people?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have a page for people to put comments. If they want to contribute any information, we take and welcome all of that. If you've got questions out there, we
will
be...
All right, so if anyone wants to communicate with you, they can do it through your website.
That's correct.
Okay, we're coming up now to the top of the hour. Isn't it amazing how quick the time went by?
Isn't time interesting?
But I really appreciate you coming on. And now that you're finally out in the open, you'll be sharing your information with lots of the people.
We're just getting started, and we're going to get a little bit more active as time goes by. Yes, Dolores.
Because I appreciate you coming on tonight. But before we sign off, I want to tell people I'm not going to be on the air for the next month. I have to go to South Africa and Australia. And so when I come back in a month's time, I'm going to have a lot of things to tell people. But thanks, Deborah and Drew, for coming on tonight.
Oh, thank you so much, Dolores. It was really nice to hear your voice. I know it's been a couple of years since we've seen each other.
Uh-huh. Okay. And I want to say goodnight to everybody out there, and thanks for listening.